some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We have a fantastic show tonight. Joining us in just a couple of moments is Peter Jude Ricciardi. He's a voice artist, producer, and creative solutionist. We're going to talk more about him in just a minute. But I want to tell you, if you are anywhere near Huntington Beach tonight, you must, and I say must, head on down to Longboards on Main Street because you'll get a chance to meet Miss California Bree Morse and American Idol alumni Andrew Bloom. They're there raising money until 9 p.m. tonight, so you have 2 hours to, well, you can listen to this and then race down there, but you get 2 hours until the show's over. 20% of the proceeds from all the food and beverage tonight are going to go to benefit the Children's Miracle Network. They've got tons of silent auction items, and Andrew is singing all kinds of songs. I was able to go down and listen to about an hour and a half of his first set before I had to come back to do the show tonight, and it's great weather. The place is packed, standing room only, but there's always room for more. So if you're in the Huntington Beach area, head on down to Longboards and catch Miss California Bree Morse and Andrew Bloom from American Idol and help raise some money for the Children's Miracle Network. By the way, Bree's going to be heading out to wherever they're doing Miss America, and you're going to have a chance to see her, I believe, on September 13th. So make sure you vote early and vote often if you have a chance to vote for your favorite contestant. Not that I'm trying to stack the deck, but I'm going to stack the deck here. Go vote for Bree Morse, for Miss California, for Miss America. So with that, I want to make sure I try to do a proper introduction here to our guest, because he's really – I'm kind of verklempt tonight because this guy is just incredible. Peter Jude Ricciardi. He's a dad. He's a writer. He's a husband. He's an idea machine. He's a producer, a voice actor, a brother, son, uncle, marketer, dreamer, red wine enthusiast, foodist. I don't know. I'm going to have to ask him what's the proper way to say it. And then he's a creative solutionist. Peter's a former creative for the Walt Disney Company, and after making a break from the castle gates, he now operates as Your Creative Solutionist. You can also go to that website, yourcreativesolutionist.com, to see more. He lives in the Seacoast region of New Hampshire with his wife, Katie, and daughters, Peter, I'm going to have to ask you this. I'm going to bring you on even before I'm finished. How do I say your daughter's first name? Sayla?
Yeah, exactly. Sayla.
And then Elodie. I love
Elodie.
Elodie. Well, that would make more sense. Elodie.
And think Elodie melody without like, the M.
There we go. And then, so Elodie is like, she's a brand new model.
Yeah, she's still a little sticky around the outside.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks, man. Thanks, Garrett. Appreciate it. I'm well. It's been a bit of a rainy, humid day here in the Northeast in New Hampshire, but it is beautiful. I'm well. It's a great summer. We've got our new addition, as you mentioned, to the family, and things are going well. I'm having a good time. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, thank you. So let me ask, because we're going to talk about all of the reasons why you're here, because there's about a million of them. So this might have to be like a part 65 episode of having Peter on the show. But before we get to that, I always love to ask people about the region of the country that they're from, or at least living in right now. So you're up in New Hampshire. I've been there once in the summertime,
yep,
and it was quite delightful. But it was for like a day. So what is it like living up in the Northeast?
You know what? I'm from Massachusetts. I grew up in the Boston area.
Okay.
I actually grew up on the mean streets of Newton, Massachusetts. Anyone that's familiar with Newton knows how rough and tumble it can really be there. Actually, Newton is just an incredibly beautiful and big town or city. Well, known for being rather affluent, but then again, they do have another side of the tracks, and yeah, that's where I came from. But I'm from the Northeast. I'm a big... You know, I love the changing seasons. Fall is my favorite season. If there was a place, and if anybody out there knows of a place where fall is kind of like the season all year round, let me know, because I'd like to go there. But, you know, the Northeast is fantastic because where I live now up in New Hampshire, Garrett, I have access. I'm about an hour or less away from the mountains. I'm 15 minutes off beautiful beaches I can swim in. And, you know, we've got where we live is surrounded by conservation land and forest and farms. It's just fantastic. So this time of year, I'll say this. If you've ever experienced a winter out in this area, we had, gosh, I don't know, 90-some-odd inches of snow at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I live at the end of a dirt road, so like, I think they forgot to plow us for about 2 months. And it was just, you know, it was absurd, but really kind of awesome. Just stock up on the red wine, you know, keep the firewood going, and it's a beautiful place to be. It really is. So we're just we belong here, you know.
So, in all seriousness, though, when you have 90 inches of snow and you're kind of like locked in there, what do you guys do?
Well, my second
you
daughter
make babies?
Arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we fight off the elements. I'll tell you, you know, the funny thing is that with that much snow, at some point you start to kind of give in and say, well, I'm one of those guys, like my father raised me, where I'm constantly, I've got to go out and square the edges of the driveway, and we've got a really long driveway. So I've got a really decent snowblower. And, you know, my wife would be like, why are you... Again, this is like your third trip out today, and I'm just getting to that, like, OCD, like, there's snow on the ground. I got to get out there for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and a half, 2 hours, clean that up, and knowing that it's still full-bore snowing and going to continue all night long. What's the point? And I would think, what is the point? But then you realize, you go, you know, okay, so I'm snow blowing out like 2 feet of snow when if I don't, it's going to be 4 feet of snow.
Right.
And there's no way I'm getting through it. Where are we going? Nowhere. It's just in case, I suppose. It's one of those just in cases. Also, New Hampshire being live free or die, you know, that's the motto. So, you know, it's like you want to have access, but... I suspect everyone's got some kind of deep underground lair type bunker somewhere under their house. We don't. We hardly have a basement. But, you know, you stock up, you hold on to your provisions, you get plenty of wood, and you ride it out, you know? It can be really interesting. Once the sun comes up, Garrett, and you start to see those first hints of grass growing, you're just, it's like being on another planet. It's like being on, what is it, Hoth? From Empire Strikes Back. I would take my 3-year-old out if she was 2 at the time, and we'd play Empire Strikes Back. She had no idea what was happening. I would try to hollow out the dog and cover myself and be like, get inside. But, you know, it's like another planet.
So that part of the season, Peter, I'm going to just tell you, it would not be one I would ever come to visit you. I would love to... Skype with you and have you momentarily stick your camera outside, because even that would be too cold for me, and you know that would be it. But you know, this time of the year sounds delightful. How in the world did you pick New Hampshire of all places? Do you have other family that's up there?
No, actually we don't. You know what we did? We were living. My wife and I went through a series of incredibly horrific rental landlord situations. Mm. We went through 2 in a row. You would think these people were renting to Motley Crue circa 1984. And, you know, it's like a guy and his wife and their small black lab Kuntik hound puppy. And we had 2 incidents in a row that were just outrageous. I can't even begin. It's a whole other show. Absolutely another show. We decided, okay, we can no longer have neighbors. We just cannot deal with neighbors or landlords or anything of the sort. Our plan was to move to Seattle, but at the time, my job just wasn't willing to allow me to move and work out of the Seattle office for some reason. They just said, no, we'd rather have you where you are, or, gosh, let's move you to Dallas. That seems central. I said no. And but all right. Let's not do Seattle then, but we really love Maine. And Maine, if you draw a straight line across from Seattle, is almost on a was it latitude? Is that the horizontal?
I think so.
Sort of a straight line right over to Portland, Maine, which is a very seacoasty. Because I'm a coast guy. you know, kind of an old fisherman town village, but really cool, up and coming, lots of stuff going on, very reminiscent of the Seattle vibe, only in a very smaller way, in a microcosm. And, you know, basically we ran out of gas on the way up there. We hit New Hampshire and we were like, well, we have all these friends in New Hampshire who were like, dude, you totally got to move to New Hampshire. It's awesome. We're going to hang out all the time. Well, like one of them got divorced. The other ones all had babies, like tons of babies all at once.
Yeah.
And then we had babies and we never see them anymore. So
of course.
We're here. We love it. But that's how we ended up here. It was just really, you know, a lot of that on the serious side, it was an opportunity to get the kind of home and property we wanted. I have no neighbors. I have neighbors. They're the best neighbors ever. They're like 3 acres away. They're super sweet, super kind, and they always look out for us. But it's like they're there, but we're not all up over each other.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have a series of turkeys that wander through our yard on a daily basis. We have foxes mating out in the woods in front, which sounds like something from the movie Aliens. If you Google the sound of a fox mating, you'll find out what I mean. And it's just really kind of a neat place to be. I'm a big, like I said, I'm a fan of, you know, the ocean. We're about 15 minutes away from it, 20 minutes away. And we've got so much open sky. That's my other favorite part about being here. There's no light pollution. So I love to look at the sky. I love to watch the sky. I love to go out with the high-powered binoculars and see things that I'm not supposed to see. And, you know, it's that was the attraction to being here.
Are you able to see the northern lights from where you're at?
No. And I've written a few letters complaining, but I haven't heard back.
It's still in the complaint department. Okay. So So I'm assuming that, you know, you grew up in Boston, you're in New Hampshire now, but you've spent quite a chunk of history at the Disney Company. And were you out here in California for that, or is this where you had the bad, you know, neighbor experiences? Or
No. I actually, I made several trips to the motherland, or to the mothership, if you will. I was able to work from a Boston office that was a remote location. They had remote locations all over the country. And,
really?
They had a division. Yeah, they had a division called Radio Disney. They still have it. It's mainly digital now, which, you know, makes sense. I don't know too many kids that are running around with AM radios in their pocket. I don't think that has happened in 30 years.
Right.
They had all these stations on AM radio. Whoever's business model that is probably at the bottom of a very deep, dark hole somewhere in the Magic Kingdom. Anyways, that lasted about 15 years, and I worked from our Boston office. And it was, you know, it was a really unique – it wasn't my first job in radio, which it's – I'll tell you, I was I had so many different jobs as a young guy. And when I came out of high school, all I wanted to do, Garrett, was rock. I just
really
wanted rock. I had hair down to, like, you know, mid-chest, and it took forever to get my hair super curly. You know, I wanted to rock. And I played in a rock band, an originals, you know, kind of heavy metal, hair metal band.
Yeah.
We were like tiny little children, again, from the Mean Street, not known for, Guns N' Roses swagger that was required.
You know, can I tell you, though,
anyway.
my producer is, and I have two very good friends that are also from the Boston area, and they all grew up there, and that's all they do is play rock music. So I think must be something in the water out there, because that when you're telling me that, I'm like, that sounds so familiar, and I'm thinking you're thinking, you know, you're an oddity, but I'm thinking that's what everybody does. They go up and play music.
You know what's in the water here? I think it's formaldehyde. I think it's just formaldehyde, I think. Somewhere along the line, the fluoride, formaldehyde, same thing, sounds the same, drop a letter, add a letter. Yeah. But anyway, you know, I bounced around in a band. In fact, I spent some time in L.A., and when I was out in L.A., Guns N' Roses was just heating up, and, you know, they had just taken off. One of the guys in my band recently told me, because we still stay in touch sporadically, he was like, remember that time we were at the thing in the club, we were at the whiskey, and he said, remember we went to that VIP record release thing? And I was like, no, yeah, sort of, kind of. You know how that goes, Gary. You know how
right.
I understand how that can happen. There are things about the early 90s, I think, mm-hmm. that are you go, huh?
Might have been, yeah, there could have been circumstances that contributed
to that. I was there. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
apparently, we were at, like, the Nirvana record release party, you know, and I'm like, gosh, I wish I'd paid attention. That would have been awesome, but I guess, you know. So I left L.A., didn't want to be in a band anymore, really sick and tired of lugging my amp around, bass string snapping, begging people to come out to see your band on a Wednesday night. And I said, what am I going to do with myself? So obviously I just went into bartending. I had an opportunity where somebody said, you've got a really great voice, you should do radio. And I thought, ah, there you go. There's a job where I can sit on my butt and make tons of money, and I don't have to actually do anything at all, right? I just have to get in. And the rub was, to get into radio, you had to have you had to do some kind of an internship. So I couldn't figure that out. Without college, no internship. A friend of mine who worked for a company called Metro Networks, which was a traffic reporters, weather reporters, news reports, sports, that sort of a thing. It was kind of a we do it all. They were in several different places around the country. I had a friend that had a friend that worked there, and he said, why don't you go talk to him? So I went on marching down to this place in Boston, sat in the lobby with my you know, shoulder-length hair, and so well, I'm here to talk to so-and-so. And a guy came through the lobby in a suit and tie, and he said, are you my 2 o'clock? And I said, yeah. And so he said, well, come with me. And we got in the elevator, went up to the office, and sat down, and he interviewed me for a position. I was not his 2 o'clock.
Oh, my gosh.
I wasn't even talking to this guy. I was kidding. But I said, what the hell? I'll go with it. I ended up getting hired to do overnight traffic. That was my first job in radio. And
wow.
You know, that sort of led me to the bug of the excitement and sort of the using my voice and talking a lot, and it was very exciting. And leading me into Radio Disney, again, I stepped in it. I went from there, which I, you know, sorry to whoever's 2 o'clock that was. I took your job. Apologies. At Disney,
how long were you in that traffic job?
5 years.
You're
it was
kidding.
The most exciting thing, man, because you could only do like a 4-hour shift before you completely burnt out and like said something, you know, insane on air.
Okay.
It was so high-paced and so energetic. You had to be able to translate all of the state trooper and the barracks CD radios that were piping all at the same time and all in code. I had to learn those codes, figure out what they meant, figure out where they were talking about, what was happening and where, call the state troopers, and, you know, those guys have a tough job. Not always the friendliest of characters, but they're busy. make friends, make nice, and get them to sort of confirm things or tell me, you know, what was accurate, what was not, and then disseminate that to a group of reporters and report it live on air. And this was all happening within seconds and went on for about 4 hours because that was really all you could
wow.
do. That was super cool.
I would never think that a job like that was that involved.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that stuff's coming from somewhere. But, you know, the best thing, the guy that was my manager at the time, Rich Kirkland, brilliant fellow, really nice guy. I remember he said to me, it doesn't matter if you're right. Just don't be wrong. And by that meaning, don't say there's nothing there if there is. If you have to say there's a tap of the brakes of the tolls, well, then say it. Because their chances are, logically, there will be. But it doesn't matter how right you are. It's just about not being dead wrong. People won't care about how right you are, but they will care when you're dead wrong. So don't be mm-hmm. dead wrong.
That's great
advice.
That
was the first time I ever dropped an S-bomb on live air. Might have been the last time. Well, you're probably hoping so, but...
Well, you can swear here. I choose not to, because if I start to swear, it sounds like I have Tourette's, and so it's more of a public service. I don't start.
I won't start, because
okay.
Once I start, it's like on a staircase. It's a very involved job. It's very exciting. You've got a lot going on. When I first started, I was the overnight traffic reporter on a station that did traffic every 10 minutes, and I'll tell you,
There's no traffic at, like, 2 in the morning. So how do you do traffic
right.
every 10
so
minutes?
I would come on literally and say things like, I would, you know, probably wake up and say, central artery in both directions looks good. And if you're headed north of town, you're going to get there. And it's mostly dark out until morning when the sun comes up. Then it'll be light. And chances are traffic will increase at that point. I'll be back in 10 minutes with the sky, eye in the sky, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
It was hysterical. And I was like, what? But, you know, they paid you for it. I was also in charge of where the helicopter went and an airplane, which, shockingly, there was just no background check for that. I was able to tell the guy, like, hey, I think you should go here. Oh, and plane, you should go there. And, you know, then film
and they
it.
Did and this
then,
in the middle of the back. Night.
Yeah, well, that was more along the drive time stuff. But the middle
the
of the night
time.
Stuff was
okay.
just... It was absurd. I do remember, and that was a while ago, when I got my first, we also had a TV component, so I was filling in for somebody one day, and I was super excited because I was going to finally get the TV hit. They weren't going to show me on TV, thank God, but I was going to be able to get the TV hit, and they were going to put my name on the screen, and I was like, Ma, they're going to put me on TV. You got to check it out. It's going to be awesome. And, I was so excited. I waited all night long, and in the morning when the morning broadcast came on, news broke. Horrible, horrible news. Princess Di- that was the
oh my gosh.
Princess Diana
yeah.
had been killed. And it was awful, but, you know, does this make me an awful person? I was also upset because my traffic
Your
report.
Your spot wasn't there. Yeah.
My spot got bumped. My Saturday morning, there is no traffic in the city of Boston right now. Got bumped, and I was like, oh, my gosh. I just spent, like, 11 hours overnight alone in this building just to be bumped, you know. And by the time they got back around, it was probably days before they got back to a traffic
report. Oh, sure.
But, yeah, I mean, that was a fun and exciting job. It was really neat. When I left that job, Garrett, I left that job because I had stumbled across a Radio Disney office in my neighborhood, which is just outside of Boston at the time. And I thought, I want to get in the radio, and I can do funny voices, and I wonder what they do in there. Let me walk in and see what they do. And this was back in the days, this was probably 1998, 1999, before people started really locking doors and things like that. I just wandered in, and they were still in the process of building, and I lucked out because the fella who was building the studio was the fella who helped me put together my demo tape for the traffic job.
Of course.
When they asked me if I had a demo tape in that 2 o'clock in the afternoon interview,
yeah.
I told the guy, and if you could see me, you'd know, I slapped my pockets and went, gosh, I think I left it on the bus. I will send it to you. And it was still, you know, we were talking. I went home and I was like, do I know anybody with a studio? Do I know anybody that knows what a demo tape is? I knew somebody. I called. I went out there, made a demo tape. We added traffic sounds and zany stuff like that. Like, why would you do that? They laughed their heads off. That's probably how I ended up with the job. But the guy that made that for me was building the studio, and I said, listen, man, I want to be in here. I want to help. I want to do what I can. I will help you hang sheetrock. I will do whatever it takes. Just let me hang around and see how the studio operates once it's finished. And they said, sure. And it wasn't long after that that they gave me, you know, the keys and the security code, and I had convinced them to allow me to come in after dark, after everything was done, and just, like, learn how to do production.
Wow!
The only thing they asked to do was to not push that little red blinking button that put things
sure.
live on the air. So I would grab a six-pack and go in there. It was right down the street from my house. I'd just walk over. I would go in. And I would sit down in front of the board, and in front of the, at the time, they were using something called an Orban Odyssey. Anybody that's an old production type guy might recognize that thing. It was a behemoth of a monster of a production machine, not like a software we use now. But I would sit around in there, and I would read the manual, and I would just try different things and push all the buttons and try to learn how to do it. And in the morning, I would come in with a series of questions and say, this happened, this happened, this happened, this didn't happen. How do I fix it? What do I do? And I would do that every night. Until the guy who was the production guy, until he left and I took his job.
Wow. That's a great story.
It was neat.
Oh,
yeah.
My word.
I didn't know I wanted to do that, Garrett.
What did you think you wanted to do?
Well, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had no idea what I wanted. I, again, still wanted to rock.
Sure, yeah.
But that wasn't It was just too much. You know, it's too hard to rock every day. You know that.
Well, you know, 6 days a week is fine, but that seventh day, boy, you just really got to tune it down a little bit. So
what was fun for me was because I didn't know any of the rules of, quote, rules of production. I had an opportunity to write, to voice, to come up with the concepts for clients, and this at the time was like low-level clients, nothing major, nothing national at the time. I was just doing like local Boston market mom-and-pop type clients, and then it started to spread. I started from Boston to I was doing the production for Hartford and Providence, and then I absorbed like Cleveland and Philadelphia and Albany, New York, and I started to sort of spread in the company like a virus. And it was really, I think, because I had no concept of right or wrong. Mm-hmm. I just made it up as I went. I was passionate. I knew what was good and what worked and what didn't. And I always felt with that sort of work, you could do it better. It has to be effective. And it has to be, especially when it was Disney, it has to be entertaining. And I was doing it differently, perhaps, than anybody else in the company at the time, because I wasn't jaded. I wasn't in the business. I didn't know anything. You know, I guess I would say there's guys that produce circles around me or engineer audio. There's probably people that go, oh, that's this and the game structure's all crazy. Well, you know what? That's great. Good deal. But you know what? You got to be able to write, conceive, and come up with the content in the first place in order to really stick around. And that's, I think, where I lucked out.
So do you think that your success at Disney really was due to the fact that you weren't a lifer already, you know, when you walked in those doors that day and you were just, for lack of a better term, fresh meat?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I there were people that worked there for a long time that had been in the industry that knew that, you know, that probably were annoyed by me being like,
sure.
Hungry puppy wants to make a difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did, and I was passionate. The reason I stayed there for 15 years was because I had some upper-level management people that recognized my passion and understood that, look, this kid is totally raw, and he's like stepping in it here, stepping in it there. He's offending this person who's way over his head. But it's his passion, and it's his drive to do great work is why we keep him. We can train him to be more company speak, although that never really worked. But we can train him. We can help him learn to be a better corporate, you know, player. But we can't train him to be this creative and this passionate. He just is. So keep him. And I was lucky. I had people that looked out for me. But I think there was a couple of times we went through some major changes in that company at the top, who. Every once in a while, whoever was at the top would come through all the markets, and you'd meet them, and they'd always come in and go, so you're Pete, huh? Interesting. And I would never know if interesting meant, interesting, I'm going to hire you on Monday, or interesting, I'm going to bring you out to, you know, I'm going
right.
to give you a raise and, you know, shuffle your hair and say, good job, kid. You know, I probably came close to being fired several times and was gracefully saved by people who knew that I meant the best and that I had a real, real passion for the product, you know. And that said, Garrett, I never drank the Kool-Aid.
Well, there you
go. I think
that
was the other difference. I did not churn out the usual, you know, it's a small world after all, have a magical day stuff. I mean, I was me. I just did me. And I did
right.
me from what I saw being as Disney's me, because now the Disney product really, you know, the classic product will always be the classic product, but the products they turn out now, you know, with our involvement, with the involvement with Disney Channel, Disney Junior, things like that, they really have a focus on being cutting edge and being relevant to the tween teen audience who always want to be, you know, treated as if they were older and more mature. Case in point, what's-her-face that crashed the Lamborghini last night?
And I haven't been that up to date on the news, so I'm not even sure which what's her face it is. Because I'd say, which one?
I believe Kendall Jenner got a Lamborghini for her 18th birthday from her boyfriend.
Well, as one does.
Yeah, well, you know, it happens.
It happens.
Apparently, she got in for the test drive, stomped the pedal to the floor, and it was in reverse, and they totaled it on a car behind them. So, anyway, that's not a green one.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to do this. We're going to take a real quick commercial break due to our fantastic sponsor, Rainbow Brew. We're going to come back, and then because we've only got a half an hour left, and I've got like four more hours of things I want to talk to you about. We're going to talk about Kathy Porter's book, Earth Ultimate Company, and then I want to talk to you about your company, too, because that's interesting. As well. So everybody hang tight. This is 30 seconds. It'll change your life. Rainbow Brew.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
There we go. So now we're back. We are back with Peter Jude Ricciardi. He's the incredible guest that we have tonight. He's going to be talking to us more about all the cool things that he's doing. I would spend the next 4 hours talking to him about Disney, but we're going to actually try to stay on point for the second half of the show because you are here as a voice artist tonight, among many other things.
Sure.
And how in the world did you get involved with Kathy's book? And I need to set this up. I've met Kathy once at the Southern California Screenwriters Conference meeting a year and a half or so ago, and I got a copy of her book, Earth's Ultimate Conflict, and I had her on the show, lovely guest, lovely lady, and absolutely enjoyed her book. I will tell you that whenever I have guests on the show, I honestly do try to read a good portion of their book before on the show, just so I can be conversational about it and that type of thing. Kathy's book was one of these books that I really enjoyed, but I just didn't have time finish at the time, and so I would read two or three chapters at a time whenever I had a chance to do it, and I've got about, I don't know, 50 pages left. So Kathy, if you're listening tonight, I still haven't finished the book, but the good news is I love to just pick it up, and your book is so well written, at least for me as a reader, I can pick it up and I'm immediately immersed right back to where I was the last time I picked up the book and was reading it. So with that, number one, thank you, Kathy Porter. But how did you get involved with Kathy's book, Earth's Ultimate Conflict, to be a, what do you call it, the audio actor for this?
Yeah, I'm the narrator and the producer. You know, a few years ago, I decided, I'd really love to do that. When I first did it was many years ago. I did it for the Perkins School for the Blind in Watertown, Massachusetts. They have a complete audio library of books for kids. And I loved doing it, but at the time, they wanted it to be very bland and very straight. So, you know what? It wasn't for me. I was having too much fun. It just wasn't something I wanted to do. So I moved on, and over the years, I started dipping into this audiobook thing. The first book I did was this great novel with 1,000 characters, and I decided to voice them all, and it was a train wreck. So I apologize to those. An absolute brain wreck. And so after that, I decided, let me do a few short stories. I found a guy found me. His name was Drac von Stoller, and he is like sort of your Stephen King type. And he has like 3,000 short stories. And
holy
I said
cow.
To him, look, dude, I'll do stories, but I want to produce them soup to nuts all the way through. And I don't want you to get in my way about it. This is what I want to do, and if you want to let me do it, I will give you my interpretation. When people are running down that gravel driveway, you'll hear it. When someone lops a head off, you'll know it. And when blood spatters across the wall, you'll hear it. And I had a ball doing it. I did 13 of them. He was great. But after a while, it's like, you know, you kind of want to change things up. I took a big break. I looked around for a book that suited me. Kathy's book caught my attention because of the subject matter. I don't want to say a fan, but I'm a study of UFOlogy and things that hover over fields in the night. And the whole concept is fascinating to me that, of course, there's life out there, blah, 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 blah. Story for another day. show for another day. I was fascinated by her subject matter, and I thought, you know what, I would read this book anyway. But my concern was she was looking for a lot more than I could give her, and I thought, I don't want to audition. I saw the book up there for a while to be auditioned for, and I finally shot her a note and said, look, this is what I think I could do with it. And I gave her an audition, but I said, I want to produce it. I don't want to just read it. As an example, what I sent her, Garrett, was a chapter where an orb is in these people's bedroom, and it drifts on into the nursery where their child is sleeping. And the orb is hovering over the crib, and you're not quite sure what's happening. The woman isn't sure if she's dreaming. The way I read it and produced it, you hear the orb. You hear it
rushing.
Over. The intention was to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Because frankly, if that's happening, you know, you should be scared to death. So she loved what I did, thankfully. She played it for a number of people, which sometimes can be the kiss of death because everyone's got an opinion. But I think more people than not enjoyed it. So she asked me if I would do it. And you know what? She's been such a joy to work with because a book like hers, and she's got so many coming out. She's got one out right now, which is the second in the series. She's got a third she's about to start writing. That first one, Earth's Ultimate Conflict, is all about current state of Earth, really current times, where an alien race is just abducting people for DNA experiments, trying to rebuild their own shattered civilization. And, you know, if you keep up with any of the sort of less than, mainstream media news, you do hear quite a bit about that sort of a thing happening. So it's an exciting book to do. I'm reading it. I'm now in the phase of cleaning it all up, and I'm giving each alien civilization in the book their own voice.
Oh, my gosh.
Creepy. And I'm so excited for this phase of the production because this is where I add all the effects, Garrett. This is where I get to go to my thousand sound effects and start to look for the ones that will make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
I am so jealous. I wish I could be a fly on the wall when you're doing this. This is just – okay, I have to ask you this. So I've only listened to a couple of audiobooks, like, ever. I'm old-fashioned. I'm trying to get on board, you know, with the Kindle and to be a hip, cool kid. I really like having a book in my hand and turning that page. I don't know what it is about, but I like that. For an audiobook, the audiobooks that I've heard have not been exactly entertaining.
Right.
How do you take what you want to do? Because you're an entertaining guy, and how do you say, you know, I'm going to give life to each of these characters? Do you give them different accents, dialects, you know, intonations? Where do you start?
You try. I mean, I'm trying. I can do a bazillion different voices. You'll never know it's me. But the problem I find with, you know, when you try and mess with accents, any accent that's not authentic is just irritating, cheap and cheesy. So it, you know, I'm not an impersonator, really. I'm not. You know, I can do Arnold, but there's a thousand people that do Arnold, and most of them are better than me. So I try to give a little bit of a different attitude, a little bit of a different flavor. You know, to do an alien civilization and to find that voice for them, you know, it's really interesting. And there's a... For me, it becomes this series of just taking on that moment. Sometimes I have to stop and go back. Sometimes it takes longer. And the truth is, Garrett, you know, I've listened to several audio books and novels, and I'm like you. I want to hold the book. I fall asleep every night with my thumb in the pages. That's how I fall asleep. Mm-hmm. It's like a baby sucking their thumb. I fall asleep with my thumb shoved inside of a book. My wife got me a Kindle, and frankly, I'm a little hooked. But that's it. I don't know if producing all the voices and all the sound and bringing it to life, old school sort of, War of the Worlds, Orwell style, is – I'm not sure if people will be able to handle it. But I think it's worth a try. I think it's exciting. I don't mean to detract from Kathy's story, and that was the big thing we talked about. The point was not to detract from her story at all, because she writes brilliantly. The point was to support what she does and breathe, give it a little bit more space to breathe, to live. And it's her vision, and I'm just bringing my version of it to life. And I'm hoping that by giving, you know, a lot of her characters are female-based, and that was what at first kind of made me pause before I was like, oh, I'd love to do this book, but it's so female-based. I'm not a female voice actor. I know.
So what do you do?
Well, I slap on a fancy dress and paint my nails. No, I try and interpret it from a different point of view. I don't try to sound like a woman.
Right.
That would be silly. You know, the very first book I ever did, this was interesting. This is my mindset, okay? Maybe it's not interesting. Maybe I just think it is. My mindset on these sort of things, the very first book I did, the one that I mentioned that I just butchered, and I'm like, why did you hire me? The entire book was done from the point of view of a mute African-American preteen girl.
Yeah, that's totally you, Peter.
Right? I know.
Yeah.
I know. You've seen my Facebook page.
Right.
But, you know, it was interesting. I did the book, and at the end, the very last line, I'm not going to say what the book is because I don't want to spoil it. The very last line, the girl finally speaks. The girl finally finds her voice and speaks. And I said, because everything else was sort of in her head. I asked my wife if she'd come in and read this last four-word line. You come in, and she was like, why? And I was like, oh, just, you know, it's the last and blah, 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 blah. I said, I hope it'll just blow someone's mind when the girl finally speaks. So to me, again, this is like Disney and learning, like, to produce and make advertising happen. I don't know what the rules are, and I frankly don't care. I want to make something fantastic, and I hope you like it. And with Kathy's book, I think we're going to do something that is absolutely well beyond anything else anybody else has done. I picture it in the end, if you watch a Pixar film and you close mm-hmm. your eyes, you know exactly what's happening in every scene. Because mm-hmm. they paint the bottoms of the drawers, and that's how I like to look at it.
I love that analogy here. So how long have you been working on this? What kind of a time commitment is involved in doing something like this? Because it's not like, Kathy, you wanted this book. Sure, I can get this to you by Monday.
Yeah,
it's
scary because
it
takes a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a long time. And you know what? I spoke to a woman the other day who told me I am she's like, oh, yeah, I just banged out this other book in like 2 weeks. And I'm like, how exactly did you do that? And she said, well, I'm one of those people that can read like 15 pages without making a mistake. And I don't have another job. So this is what I do. And I was like, brilliant. I get it. I can see how you do that. It takes a long time. Gosh, I think we're coming up on, I hate to say, like 9 months. I think I wanted to have this book in her hands in June. But frankly, and she, you know, we talked about this, and she's been so kind. And Kathy, if you're listening, thank you. She understands that, you know, I have a job to do. Even though the Disney job ended back in September, I have my own business to run. I have to feed my family.
Right.
And, you know, it takes time. And to do this right and to do this well, it can't just be done in the snap of a finger. And I'm hoping that the results will be worth the wait. I think they will be. I'm excited to deliver this to her. I'm excited to start delivering chapters to her because I think she's going to be thrilled. And, you know, that's the fact is that I still have, like we were saying, I have my own business to run, yourcreativesolutionist.com. I have got to you know, take care of that business too.
Well, so real quick on Kathy's book, and then we'll transition to Your Creative Solutionist, because I want to hear all about that, because I want to really gush about your website too. Do you have a studio in your home that you are now operate out of, or do you have to trudge on down somewhere, you know, in the big city of Boston or something like that to do your work?
At night, I break into a variety of high-end studios in the city of Boston, New York, and Hartford.
Love it.
I work out of my own studio in my own home. Before our first came along, it was this gorgeous room with a giant skylight overlooking the farms and the land, and you know, I could see the stars as they whiz by at night. And then we had a baby, and that became the nursery. But we found a different space in the house that was like, well, what are you going to do with that? And I built a little studio nook where, in today's world, Garrett, you don't need a ping pong table in the lounge, although that'd be nice. You know, leather couches and high loft space ceilings with an espresso machine that looks like the Hogwarts Express in order to have a great studio and provide great content. So, yeah, I work out of my own studio in my own home.
Love it.
Invested in great equipment. And, you know, that's how you do it. It's all about the ideas anyways.
I think that is so smart. And I think what's also smart is your creativesolutionist.com. Can we talk about your website? I just love going to your homepage and seeing those rocks stacked up there. And the first time I pulled this up, I went, well, that's interesting. But it caught my eye and it kept my attention. What do you do with your Creative Solutionist?
Well, I'll tell you, this website, and thank you for that. I built this website myself. And
wow.
This is not what I do. That's probably why it took me, you know, 4 weeks to do it. But yourcreativesolutionist.com is about, a lot of people would say to me, oh, you're a radio guy. Oh, you do production, you do voiceovers, you're funny. I am. But at Disney, I learned to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the guy that used to go and MC the events. I used to MC huge concerts and little concerts. I used to find myself standing in a Burger King parking lot by myself on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. just yelling to nobody. I did the events. I went to the client needs analysis meetings. I helped close deals. I was the pitch guy who would go into the boardroom and get up on the table and go, look, here's the deal. Here's what we're going to do, and we're going to do this here, here, here. Digitally, we'll do that. On site, we'll do this. On the radio, it's going to be that, and the TV is going to look like bang. So I learned to do all those things. So what I realized a creative solutionist was the amalgamation of all of that. It took everything into account and said, you know, I don't mean to say I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. I'm a master of all trades, and I have a brother named Jack. This is what I do. I help people solve creative issues that are stopping them. I help really people connect to an audience, and it doesn't matter how you're looking to do it. I can help you find a way to connect to an audience so that they remember it, so that it means something, and so that you build – this is something I learned from Disney. Building the relationship means everything. People don't go to Disney World because of a mouse. People love the mouse because there's a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's an experience that you remember and you pass along to your children. Kodak, they didn't sell film. They sold memories. And that's what I try to apply to everything I do now, whether it be copywriting, audio production, TV, you know, even looking at businesses and saying, you know, your business is branded or positioned as being an incredibly creative entity. And yet when I call, I get, you know, this woman who sounds like she's just came in from a cigarette and she's just like, hi, how are you? Thank you for calling, blah. And it's like, my God, what?
Right.
So finding ways to go, hey, you know, power to you, but we can make that sound like you are who you say you are. And they're all points of contact for businesses and organizations and people. Points of contact with a customer, with a client, with an audience, that's where you make your bread and butter. And that's what I try to do with your creative solutionist.
Can I tell you, here's the quote that I found on your website that I love the best. It says, be effective plus be memorable equals be heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That to me is everything. I saw that and I was just like, oh, Peter. Not only is your website compelling to look at, but you've got, you know, you got the whole thing right there. Be effective plus be memorable equals nerd. Wow. So what have – okay, from a – all of that standpoint, what have been some of your funnest – and my English is really good. My some of your funnest stories that you have cultivated over the years, maybe some a couple of your biggest challenges that you've had with clients.
Sure, sure. One of my favorite challenges I had was somebody that said, I've got a client who is a it was a blood bank for pets, and we need to make it work. And it was on Disney, and they were like, it's a blood bank for pets, and they want to promote the fact that they're a blood bank for pets, and people should come on down and bring their pet and have blood drawn and have it put in a bank, and, you know. And I was like, that's insane. And, you know, Disney, there's just – and that was part of the rub with Disney was that there was just so many things you couldn't say. They were like, right. We're the most creative people in the world, but you can't say any of these things. And you can't even look at that. And you don't even think about this. And it was mm-hmm. like, well, okay, so you want me to work in this tiny little box? Yes, but be creative. Oh, okay. So, you know, my solution for the blood bank was to go, okay, I can't say blood bank. I can't say this. I can't say that. I can't do anything. Here's what I can do. I can position this to parents and say, hey, basically, not verbatim, but basically saying, hey, okay, so within your body, in your veins, in your arteries, there's something called hemoglobin. There's type A, there's type B. What is it? Yeah, okay, keep it to yourself. That's one word. Okay, and then there's this other place. It's a building, and you keep your money there. You open a variety of accounts, checking, savings. It's called a, yes, yes, okay, then there's that word. Okay, then there's this furry, feathery, leathery creature that lives at your house, and you love it as a member of the family, and you want it to live forever, but you know it won't. You want to take care of it. Okay, so let's take, it's, okay, let's take first word, second word, third word, put them together. Don't say it, but that's what it is. And we're having one down at the park on Thursday, you know. And that's how we got the message out there. And they were like, oh, okay, you can say all that. And I was thinking, gosh, I hope it's effective. You know, funniest stuff to me or the most fun stuff, Garrett, are the clients that are willing to go all in and understand that I work with an agency in the Portsmouth, New Hampshire area. It's a Sean Tracy Associates agency. They're great. I work with them, and there's one client that it's a express care, you know, emergency express care. Walk in, I've got like a nail in my head, help me.
Right.
Now, all of these clients, in my experience, a lot of times your hospitals, your dentists, and all that, they're not the funnest folk on earth, and they don't see it as being fun. And nor, I guess, should they. But in terms of advertising, the traditional way is to say, well, we're a hospital, and we've got some serious doctors who know what they're doing. We've got a friendly staff, and they know how to treat people right. And we've got the best equipment in the world, high-tech, high-end. Kids love it here. You know, and it's like, bullshit, bull, 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 bull. All of you have that. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Right. Nobody is saying, you know, our doctors really hate kids, and they're not really 100% sure of what to do about certain things. Some things, yes. And our equipment's a bit dated. Some of it's rusty and a little dull, but we can still make it work. Come on in. We'll fix you. No, you know. So this one express care place has allowed us to do this entire campaign where it was all about, I came up with this thing, and I said to them, what if we come into it and we do it really quick, really easy, really simple. We say something like, we show a video of a fella in a karate gi, and he's leaning over a giant log, raising his hand, and he's gonna do what you know what he's gonna do. But the voiceover says, "I'm Gary's hand. Gary, do karate classes. You know what happens next," and then you see him strike at the log, but it pauses before he even hits it.
Right.
And then it just drops out and fades into the blah, 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 blah. Express care is this, that, loving, and we care about people and this, that, and the other thing. And then we made a series of these spots where it was like a woman boxing, and it was like, I'm Joe's nose. Joe said his girlfriend, Joe thought it was cute that his girlfriend was learning how to box. Oh, it's really cute. Ooh, you know what happens next. And you see the girl like swing right at his nose. So they have allowed us to do this entire campaign where we've taken fairly minor injuries and have a little fun with them.
Sure.
And to me, the effectiveness becomes, It's memorable. We've got your attention immediately. It's memorable. It's something you can relate to because a lot of these scenarios, you know, whether it be a bike riding accident, being stung by bees, ice skating and falling and hurting yourself, we've taken all these real-life scenarios and just made them a little poke-poke, tongue-in-cheek, elbow in the ribs, funny.
Sure.
And that, to me, is what a success story is. That's a client who wants to go all in, who understands that it's not just about them. What I learned is this, Garrett, is that clients will often say, well, I don't like that. And as nicely as I can, I say, it's not about you liking it. It's about being effective for the audience that you're trying to reach. If you like what I do, that's appreciated and that's a bonus. But if we're reaching your audience in a way that is going to affect an action, then that's all that matters. And that's really at the core of what I do.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
You must sleep well every night.
I snore a bit. I do snore.
Is that the red wine, or is that just from being exhausted?
Oh my gosh, are you watching me?
Yes, I've got the webcam on.
Well, I did wear pants. I will say that.
Well, I did not. So there you go. I'm in my gym shorts, but it's still sunlight here in Southern California, and it's still probably a good 75 degrees.
Fantastical.
So
yeah,
As we're getting ready to wrap up, we've got about 3 minutes left. So give people who are listening hope for tomorrow that want to do things like what you do. What career advice, if you could go back and, you know, the big thing now is, you know, if you could go back and tell your 16-year-old self, you know, whatever, that for me it's do sit-ups and don't drink.
Right.
But, you know, what would you go back and tell, you know, somebody who's, you know, young, and it could be somebody who's age is old, but, you know, young as far as their desire to start in the business, what would you tell them to get them going?
Practice your boudoir moves.
Okay.
No.
That's
no,
a good one,
I
though.
Would say take a business course.
Yeah.
A. Take a business course. I would say don't let anyone tell you that you're not good enough. You know what the best part is? Forget everything else. This is what you do. You find out who does what you want to do and does it really well. And you reach out and you contact them and you tell them who you are and what you want to do. I have found more people willing to pay it forward than I can count on all the hands in my house. People who are successful generally are willing to pay it forward. And if you reach out and you're honest and you're real, they will help you, and they will tell you what you really need to do. I've tried to do the same thing, and I'll tell you in a nutshell. I did this once with I read an interview with a fellow named, I think it was Bob or Bill Bergen, who took over for Mel Blanc as the voice of Porky Pig. I read an interview with him in a magazine and was like, oh, my gosh, there's his email. I shot him an email, told him who I am, told him what I did, sent him my demo, and about 3 weeks later, I got a phone call on my cell phone, and I'm like, this voice is oddly familiar. He's like, it's Bill Bergen. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's Porky Pig. Porky effing Pig is calling me on the phone. Let me pull over. And then I just asked him 1,000 questions, and he was super helpful. So I would say to anybody who wants to get into voiceover, wants to get into production, you know, find the people that are really excelling at what you do. Copy what they did. Figure out how they took their path. But make your own path. Because that's really what it's all about. There are no rules. Anybody that tells you there are rules is probably trying to keep you from, you know, surpassing them. That's the way I think of it.
I love that answer. And by the way, I was listening to, and I don't mind promoting other radio shows. I was listening to the Frank DeCaro show today on Sirius XM Out Q106, and they had Bill Bergen talking to Frank DeCaro about which version of Porky Pig he chose to use when he went in to talk to Mel Blanc or the people at, you know, Warner Brothers and all of that stuff years and years and years ago. So, I mean, what a small world that you're bringing up that name today.
Yeah. I mean, literally, the guy called me, and I was like, I have done that with a variety of people. Both locally and nationally, you know, you find them and you go, you know, I have there's a woman who became a mentor of mine. Her name is Kathy Rubin. She's a she's like that. She writes for the Huffington Post. She's an author of children's books. She's actually related to the real Alice in Wonderland and has done a series of books on that. And she's a philanthropist. She's brilliant. Her and her husband are wonderful people. And she has always, like, I interviewed her at Disney after I read a book at a big book literacy reading thing, and she saw me, and we connected. But she's always been one of those people that I could come to and talk to about what I want to do, and she's always been a voice of reason and a real angel for me in so many instances. And that's what I suggest to anybody who wants to get into a business like this. It isn't easy. I struggle every day. I get turned down for way more auditions than I ever get. But you have to want to do it, you have to love it, and you just have to throw the rules out the window.
And with that, folks, we are out of time for tonight. This has been Peter Jude Ricciardi. He is an amazing creative person, and his website is yourcreativesolutions.com. Go check it out and hire him for all of your creative needs. I think that would be awesome for you guys to do. We're going to be live tomorrow night at our regular start time of 5 p.m. John Hill coming on the show. He's going to be talking about raising money for the school in Nepal that he is looking to build. And this guy's just on fire. So tune in tomorrow night at 5 for Mr. Sean Hill. Peter, thank you very much for being on the show. And if you live tomorrow night, don't drive distracted. And it's
you've been listening
Radio.
To Rated G Radio.
Thank you.